I look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason. This is lecture number 4, July 2nd, 11-day spiritual retreat. I look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason. What are thoughts of truth that fail logic and reason? Thoughts of truth that fail logic and reason are a person who is walking across coals of fire and not burning their feet. When you and I observe people walking across coals and not burning their feet, it defies logic and reason. Logic would say, certainly, fire and the skin would burn. And reason would say, anyone who walks over fire, or anyone who puts their feet on fire, even just put your feet on there, would have roasted tootsies, you know. Okay, now. I look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason. This is a spiritual retreat. It's a retreat in which we go in ourself and we say to ourselves, what is it that we want to do? And Ellen came up with the comment, well, if that's the way the principle works, why doesn't everyone work the principle? And of course, the answer is so simple. I look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason. You say principle and logic are the same? Not at all. Principle and reason are the same? Not at all. You see, if you can tell yourself, as we were talking, that you are walking over cool, wet moss, and you believe it, so it will be. The Indians who live in Tierra del Fuego, at the tip of South America, they live naked there in this cold, cold weather, sub-zero much of the time, and yet they are like living at Palm Springs, living in Florida. They're walking on the beach in their bare feet. They're walking in the ocean. The kids are playing in the ocean while the parents are fishing in the ocean, all naked. Obviously, and it's that cold, what sort of a suit, except a wetsuit that divers might use or whatever, would keep you warm. But even that would be kind of a tough thing to keep you warm. What keeps them warm? What keeps them warm? What lets the person walk on apparent fire? What lets the person become an apparent multi-billionaire with absolute unlimited amounts of money and a good man? All billionaires are not bad men, but a good man. And, well, what gives him that privilege to be so wealthy? That privilege to have struck it rich, as the saying goes, to have done just the right things that brought wealth into his mind, into his body. Well, it brings us to a very simple point. And that simple point is, when you're a child, you oftentimes have aspirations to be a certain thing. And you let nothing dissuade you. Oftentimes you don't even tell people what your aspiration is because it's your secret. It's your goal. It's your dream. And then all of a sudden, there you are, that wonderful goal and dream to you. How did that happen? That kid lived next door to me. He had no more brains than my kid has, you know. He has no more brains than I do. How come he's got this, you know? Well, what happened to him? Well, he had a dream in his heart, and he followed it. He had something that defied reason and logic. He had things that defied the very aspects of all of life. I look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason. Now, what thought of truth would a billionaire have that would fail logic and reason? Well, a billionaire would just use one simple term. I'm independently wealthy. And being independently wealthy, it has no logic, it has no reason to it, it has no specifics to it. It has no limitation to it or no expansion to it. You can't be more or less of it, you know, you just are all of it. Now, the kid is one-pointed on this, more so than you know. More so than you know. And the kid is putting this cause in motion and bringing about this effect in his life, more so than you know. Now, how does a kid do that? How does a kid, with his unsophisticated manner, bring that about? It's a very simple, wonderful thing that he does. He just knows it. He knows in his heart, I am a rich person. He doesn't think rich. I am independently wealthy. You see, the thing is, what are the values of richness? If you say to a little boy who lives in a rich home, are you a rich family? Oh, I don't know. Well, do you have everything you want? No. I want a horse. My dad won't let me have a horse. You know? I want a baby sister. My dad won't let me have a baby sister. You know? I want a lot of things my dad won't let me have. But you're a rich boy. You live in a rich house. Your father is very wealthy. Your mother is very wealthy. You got everything. Well, I don't have a little sister. You know? Now, you say, that's stupid. You know, that's stupid. That lacks logic and reason. Now, this little boy who wants this little sister, he doesn't know why he wants a little sister. He's seen little sisters in other families and thought that was kind of nice. And so he thought, I'd like a little sister. Show him. He just puts that cause in motion and forgets it. Forgets it. He knows his mom and dad don't want to cooperate. So he just forgets it. And then, lo and behold, his aunt dies and has a little girl, and they end up being the parents for that little girl. And they adopt that little girl because their mother and father are not there. And who would have ever thought it? I mean, the aunt was perfectly happy. The little girl was perfectly happy. Everything was perfectly happy. A little twist of nature. Now, did the little boy cause that twist? No, he just wanted a little sister. He wasn't concerned whether mommy and daddy had the little girl or whether it came from somewhere else. He wanted a little sister. And he didn't want a little sister with panic. He just wanted a little sister, period. If you had your wishes, what would you wish for? A little sister, you know. What does that mean? I don't know. It's kind of fun, you know. Somebody to play with. But it's a baby. You can't play with a baby. That's okay. I'll play with it like a baby plays with a baby. I'll go into my little sister and I'll say, hey, precious baby. Hey, little sister. Tell me, before they make you forget, what's God like? Because she came directly off the produce line of God, and she knows what God's like. And do you think he gets an answer? You bet he does. Do you think he gets an answer to everything? You bet. Do you realize that people who are consistent, persistent, one-pointed, no judgment, no limitation, no logic or reason, they have everything they want. Hey, little boy, are you wealthy? Yes, I'm wealthy. Well, you live in a poor house. Your dad doesn't have much money. You don't have much to eat. What do you mean you're wealthy? Oh, I'm wealthy because I got every desire of my heart. And what's the desire of your heart? Well, the desire of my heart is to have my daddy and my mommy love each other and have them love us, and they do, to have everybody around in our neighborhood think that we're a wonderful family, that we're good people, and we do, to think that I'm a nice boy, you know, and to know that I do good at school, and I just am finding school so much fun. I'm wealthy. I'm rich. And they say, well, you don't have much money. Ah, but that's not the point. I'm rich. I've got everything. And what's going to happen to that kid? We've read of a lot of these kids who grew up in ghettos and places where they didn't have much money and they didn't. Life was pretty tough. And they became the great men and the great women. And what did they do? They became the Danny Thomas, great television entrepreneur and actor. They became, you could just name lots of movie actors and stars, and they were them, because they came from ordinary, simple families, and some of them very simple. And the Jewish family, every time a child would do something, the mother would say, my son, the doctor, my daughter, she married this rich guy. Not my daughter married someone she loved. She married this rich guy. She married the butcher, And this is beautiful. But you see, they build that into their children. They build that into their psyche, into their feeling. Now, they build that into their children. They build it into their psyche, their feeling. They build that into their children. They build that into their psyche, their feeling. They build that into their children. They build that into their children. They build that into their children. Little, gentle, building it into their children. I mean, not so gentle. A little pressure, building it into their children. Building it into, until the children don't know why, but they excel. They excel because that's their nature, that their mother and father expected of them, that their family expected of them. We are a Rothschild family, or we are an Agabua family, and all the Agabua children are brilliant, right?
Right.
My God, yes. And every one of the Agabua children accomplish every desire of their heart, even if they get in the way.
Yes.
Yes. And I am their mother, and so I am saying, get out of your own way. And they get out of their own way. You say, you are a success now. You are wonderful now. Because they're great. They're great. Everything they touch turns to gold. Everything they touch turns to something very beautiful. Oh, maybe they have a few little turnovers here and there of changes along the way, because to accomplish certain things, they had to go through certain things, and they did. Now, are you willing, Sylvia, are you willing to not be facetious? Are you willing not to be facetious just for a moment? Are you willing to put that diamond on your finger and have it be appraised as a diamond? Can you visualize that diamond, a diamond? Do you have enough imagination in you? Do you have enough, unlimited, crazy imagination, you know what I mean? Are you so way out in your imagination that you can do it? Now, can you imagine yourself riding a horse? Can you imagine yourself getting on one of these Arabian mares, one of these beautiful stallions, a mare is a female, a stallion is a male, on one of these beautiful stallions, and then sitting there in the saddle and cantering around, and then sitting back and having the horse rear up on its hind feet and put its two forefeet in the wind, and then say, and then down again, and you feel totally at home. Can you visualize yourself doing that for the moment? Yes. Now, can you visualize yourself doing it when you're on the horse? When you're actually riding that horse? Can you do it without ever being on the horse? Yes, you can. Now, it's going to take a love of yourself first, and then a love of the horse. Now, do you go up to the horse and shy away from it? Do you go up to the horse and give it a carrot? Do you go up to the horse and put your nose in the horse's nose and say, you're nice, and really mean it from the bottom of your heart? Do you go up to the horse and lay your head against his head and say, wow, in your presence I feel so good? The horse knows what you're talking about, And the horse will respond to you. Now, you see, you don't do that because you don't care. You don't do that because that's not a particular thing in your world. You don't do that because it is not something that you're thinking about. But now, when our neighbors had their horses over here, and they brought the horses over here, did we cuddle them? Did we snuggle them? Did we be close to them? Did we tell them how wonderful they were? Mm-hmm. And were they? Mm-hmm. Now, was Anita a little leery to ride the horses around here? Yeah, she was. She wasn't. She should have been on the horses every moment she could, riding on their back. But she was a little insecure with those horses, and she was and the horses knew it. And yet the horses let little children ride on them just as easy as pie, because little children are not frightened of them. Now, Anita rides horses. She rides horses that she loves and knows, and has a great time. But these horses, she did not. Now, why? She didn't love them. If she had gone, she has done this training. Who's the teacher of the training program?
Pirelli.
A horse training program, which is a worldwide horse training program. She's worked with them. She knows all the routine. She taught us the routine, and she showed us the routine. We saw it on videotape and so forth. We probably still have the videotapes here. Or did they take them along?
I don't think so.
But on the videotapes, it shows how to train a horse and how to prepare a horse. We have dog training tapes, too. And so we have all these things here. But now, did she diligently work with the tape and then work with the horses? No. She had other things to do, and she was more interested in just leading the horse around and saying, I'm leading a horse around. Now, will she ever become a great rider doing it that way? No. Will she ever be happy doing it that way? No. What is she happiest doing? She's happiest chasing John. That's what she's happiest doing. And what a waste. What a waste. John's not worth chasing. John should be trained to chase her. You know? John should be trained to chase her. But she hasn't trained John like that, because she has always thought she had to go after him. Now, I'm not being mean or unkind. I'm just telling you all these illustrations. These illustrations are where you are in your mind, in your heart, in your world. This is what you do with your life. Now, can you ever walk on fire? You probably could, but you're not really too happy about it. You're not excited about it, because you just aren't excited about it. Because you're just a little fearful that you might burn your feet. But if you don't go into something with all your heart and all your soul and all your being, you'll burn your feet. If you don't go into something with all of your feelings and emotion, you won't succeed. Now we say here, I look for thoughts of truth with which fail logic and reason. I look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason. Now, why do we look for thoughts of truth that fail logic and reason? We're talking about the Saint Germain friend in Nigeria.
Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin. Yeah. And
not Benjamin. Franklin
O'Quarrie. Now, why is Franklin O'Quarrie not Saint Germain?
Because he says it, because he wouldn't need to say it.
No. He is not Saint Germain because he has not made it his business to know who Saint Germain is. He has read a little bit about him and he thought that's cool. But he has not demonstrated to himself that he's Saint Germain. Now, what are some of the things that Saint Germain has done? Saint Germain demonstrates when he needs money, he just demonstrates a diamond in his hand. He'll take a piece of dirt and he'll crush it in his hand and bring forth a beautiful faceted diamond. And it'll bring money to him. And many other things that he does. Yeah, many other things that he does. Now, why doesn't Benjamin do that? Franklin do that? Why doesn't Franklin do that? Because Franklin says, well, that's not important. Well, you see, don't try to say that you're somebody if you don't do what they do. Now, If Franklin said to us, I am Franklin O'Quarry, right?
Yeah.
I am Franklin O'Quarry. I am Franklin O'Quarry. I am a wonderful man. I'm a happy man. And then he does something nice. I'm Franklin O'Quarry. And then he does something else nice. I'm Franklin O'Quarry. Pretty soon everyone gets to know that Franklin O'Quarry does nice things. And they think Franklin O'Quarry knows how to whisper to horses and dogs and children and women and men. He knows how to speak to men who come to him with needs of healing. And he whispers in their ear, and he says, it is done unto you according to your belief. Now go and sin no more, you silly nut, you silly goose. And so then they leave him, and they stop doing the things that were negative that brought them the illness, and the healing takes place in their life. And they say, Franklin did that to me. Franklin did that to me. And Franklin says, okay, thanks for drumming up business for me. You know. And so everyone who comes to him, he whispers in their ear, and he says, it's done to you according to your belief. And go out and sin no more, you silly goose. You know. And so they go out and they try to stop doing the negative things that they've been doing and start doing the positive things. And they say, Franklin O'Quarry, he is a healer. He knows how. He tells you right where it is. Jesus Christ is a healer. And Jesus said, no, no, no. It's done unto you according to your belief. But you see, they get to believe in the man, in the individual, in the woman. And it's a silly thing. Now, those are just little things. Those are just little things. You're thinking about those things. Franklin's thinking about those things. But Ellen was telling us a story how she was dreaming of being lifted up by Heinz, and how she was lifted up by her foot by Heinz, you know. And she thought, oh, this is cool. And she said, but Heinz, how did you do that? Show me how you do this again. And she lifted herself up. And everybody said, hey, you could do it yourself. And now, does she believe she can do it herself? If she can do it herself, she can do it right now. She can do it right now. She can lift herself right up right now. Why doesn't she do it?
Because
she doesn't think she can be lifted up. Ellen, have you ever been sitting on the train or the airplane and been totally tired of sitting in the seat that you're sitting in? And so you just levitate and float above your seat near the ceiling of the airplane and just sleep. Have you ever done that?
No.
No. Because it's beautiful. Yeah, good. And nobody sees you. Nobody sees you, because if somebody saw you, then they'd all do it. No, you'd be like a magnet, you know. And you don't want everybody up on the ceiling, because they want you to be buckled in your seatbelts, you know. But yes, this can be done. And it's done more often than you know, because you cannot see people. And you cannot see people because people are not doing it for show. People are just doing it to enjoy themselves. Now, is this something that's real and something that's beneficial for you? Is it something that you'd like to do? Then, you see, it's a total abandon of all principles, a total abandon of all logic and reason, the total abandon of everything that you've ever done before, ever thought about before. It's a total abandon of that. And when you totally abandon it, then what happens? Then you do it. Mm-hmm. Now, does Ellen seek to float up on the ceiling of the airplane and take a nap? Or does she just say, I think I'll stretch out and relax?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, if Ellen is so smart and so good, why doesn't she just create herself in first class?
Mm-hmm.
If Ellen is so smart and so good, why doesn't she just create herself at her destination and spending the few hours in bed, having a good night's sleep? Why doesn't Ellen just create herself in her indefatigable body, never needing sleep, never needing rest, never needing anything other than that? Why don't you do that, Ellen? Why don't you do that, Ellen? See, and the thing is, it's not that interesting to Ellen. And I said, well, sure is interesting to me. That sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds like a real wonderful experience. Yes, it is. It does sound that way. But it's the same thing as walking on fire. Why do you think out of the billions of people on the face of the earth, only a couple thousand people walk on fire?
Because they don't find it interesting, the rest.
And once they walk on fire?
They do it again and again, many.
Yeah, yeah. But once they walk on fire, then what do you know about those people?
They say that they are walking over fire.
No. Once they do it, what do you know about those people? Not that they walked on fire.
They cannot apply the principle otherwise.
They apply the principle otherwise in many, many ways, and they are not recognized as applying the principle. You merely look at them and you think that's the way they are.
Oh, like that one.
Now, Franklin O'Quarrie is just the way he is. Now, don't answer this question because it's not right for you to do so. Is Franklin O'Quarrie a good man? And is Franklin O'Quarrie a successful man? Is Franklin O'Quarrie a fulfilled man? Is Franklin O'Quarrie a man who is himself and has fun and does not care about anything else in the world except to be himself and have fun? Is that who Franklin O'Quarrie is? If that's who you say he is, then that's who you are. And that's beautiful. Now, why would Franklin O'Quarrie not be that way?
Because I don't see,
because yeah. I'm not that way.
So it all comes back home again, doesn't it?
Yes.
Okay, now. You want to become a minister. You want to go out and save the world. You want to go out and help the world as a minister. You cannot help the world as a minister, you cannot save the world as a minister, as long as you see the world needing to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
See? And that's tough. That's really tough. Because people think that what a minister does, a minister goes out and saves the world, a minister goes out and helps people, a minister goes out and raises the dead and helps the sick get well. And a minister doesn't do any of those things. A minister shows each person how to be themselves and have fun. Come on, let's go be ourselves and have fun. Let's go climb this tree. But I'm 80 years old, I'm 90 years old. That's okay, come on, let's climb the tree. Yeah. I decided I'm going to take the bench that's down at the motorhome and put it up at the west, south corner of our property. But I don't want to put it there without protection because the Border Patrol likes to roll over our benches now and then. And so I'll put the bench there, but I'll put two big logs on each side of it. So they would have to roll over the log first before they got to the bench. And that way the bench has a nice, long, happy life. Good idea.
Yeah.
So you see, all these wonderful things are ours. Now, why didn't we think of that before? Have you ever sat on the bench that's up there at the southwest corner? Or you sat in the white chair?
I did sit.
You sat on the bench too?
Yeah,
I sat on the bench. And it's nice. Have you sat on the bench at your own bench?
Yes.
Isn't that nice?
It's nice.
That's nice. Well, that's the same bench I want to put up there. Same kind that we have at the motorhome. So, you see, these little thoughts to show that we really love our property, that we really enjoy our property, that we really are getting a great deal of good out of it, means that the property is going to be more perfect for us. If we don't care about the property, then it ceases to be beneficial to us. It ceases to be something important to us. I know as I look at Shangri-La, and I see the little bit of cosmetic work that needs to be done there on the lawn. And I think to myself, oh, what a shame. Just a little bit of weed pulling or a little bit of weed cutting, and that place would look like a park, like it does every year when we get to it. But we don't do that. We take other things first, you know. We take other things first. Now, Ellen?
Yes, ma'am.
Have you ever sat under the rain gutter here on this bench when it's raining?
No.
Well, if you do, you'll find that the rain gutter leaks right there, right over the bench. And in the rain gutter are leaves and pine needles and all these things all around the house here, so that it keeps the rain gutter from passing the rain along when it does come. And see, those are little things you have to take care of now and then. It's just like in England. In England, people have fires in their fireplace. Always they have fires in the fireplace. Always burning fires to keep warm and make the place nice. And what do they need to do in England? In England, they need to clean the chimney. That's exactly what they need to do. And so they have the chimney sweep over in England who cleans the chimney. And this has to be done. And when it's not done, what happens? The house burns down. Or the house fills up with smoke or some other silly thing. You see, when we care about anything, we give it our attention, we give it our empowerment. And when we give it that empowerment, then it comes forth for us. So if we love our property, if we love where we are, if we love all the things we have, then everything works out for us so beautifully. People often say to me, how many acres do you have up there? And I say, 104. That's nice. And I say, yes, the BLM on three sides, Indian Reservation and so forth. And then it's on the north side, people. But it's nice. And they say, oh, how wonderful. Gee, that's so fantastic. That's so glorious. That's so great. And I said, well, what do you feel when you come here? And they said, well, I feel peace. I feel it's a lovely place to be. It's a place of relaxation, a place of inspiration. Why do you think it's a place of inspiration? Why do you think it's a place of relaxation? Well, because when I walk around with you, I don't feel any tension. I don't feel like there's things that are waiting to be done. I don't feel like I'm taking you away from something important. I don't feel like there's a rush in the world. Everything is in slow motion, peace and peace and peace and peace and peace. And I say, that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. It's all totally peace. But it's only because that's where my concentration is. That's where my attitude is. Now, I look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason. We're talking about walking on fire. We're talking about walking on water. We're talking about healing. We're talking about raising from the dead. We're talking about all these things. But all these things we're talking about are wrong, aren't they? Because we do not walk on fire, we walk on cool wet moss. The world thinks we walk on fire, but we don't. When I walked into the fires in Wyalusing State Park in Prairie du Chien, and I was taking pictures of these giant forest fires, and I was right in the middle of there, taking my camera and shooting big logs falling down from the trees and so forth. And then later I walked back out of there, and the fireman said, don't you know how dangerous that was? Don't you know that you didn't have a mask on? You didn't have a fireman suit on? You're just wearing your suit coat and so forth? And I said, yeah. And then one guy came over, and he took my coat, and he said, you shouldn't do that. And then he smelled my coat, and he said, there's no smoke in your coat. I said, hey, how about that? But you see, the thing is, I didn't say a thing to them.
Yeah.
I just walked away and was myself. But this is living the principle beyond logic, beyond reason. This is living the truth. And I give you these illustrations not to say that I'm so good. You have done this yourself and do these things. But do them regularly, 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 in every single way that you do anything. And just watch how things happen. Now, preparing ourselves to do that, that's a big step. It's a big step, we think, but how do we prepare ourselves to do that? How do we prepare ourselves to walk on fire? How do we prepare ourselves to be healers? How do we prepare ourselves to do anything? You know, when I was at the Menninger Foundation, the one Sufi group was teaching us how to look at auras. And I thought, hey, that's cool. I never had any trouble looking at auras, but I thought that was cool. So he had put this black velvet piece behind you, and then each person went up there and stood in front of that. And the light shone on them, and then people began to see their auras as it would radiate out into the black field. And then when I got there, they couldn't see my aura. Because it radiated beyond the black field. And when I was at the Fullerton Junior College in Long Beach, California, we had a program in which I was giving lectures on these things, and other people were giving lectures on similar things, which were might be called gifts of the spirit or unusual things of that nature. And so the one guy gave the raise your arm, you can't raise your arm, you sit, everybody in the chair, raise your arm. Now, the other arm won't move at all, it won't move at all. And people try to move it away from their body, they couldn't move it. They just couldn't. Said, okay, you can do whatever you want now. And instantly they could do it. Now, that's a bit of hypnosis, a bit of self-hypnosis. And when I walked into the building, some of my close friends who were very much into reading auras and so forth, they said, do you know where your aura is? And I said, no. Well, your aura is everywhere. Your aura preceded you coming in the building by a block or two. You know, it was so powerful and so great. And I said, well, that's nice, And, I don't need their praise for what I am. And they said, how do you develop your aura? How do you develop your awareness of these things? And I said, well, the first thing you do is to release yourself. You say, I am released. I am unlimited. You say to yourself that, that I have no sieve, no filter between me and my divine self. My divine self expressing through me is so brilliant, so bright, so fantastic. And you see, I believe this. I believe that the divine in me is unlimited. I believe the divine in me is great. And if you look at me right now, and you were able to do so, you would see an aura, but you would see only basically a white aura, because the colored auras start further out. And the white aura is what I have close in. And you've probably heard about the chakras of the Kundalini and so forth, and how they emanate from the golden aura out of the brain here and the various chakras of the body, the various areas where they have the vibratory powers that come. And, hey, those are real, but they're not necessary. They're real, but they're not necessary. Now, why do I say they're not necessary?
Because limited. There's only one light.
We are one. There's only one. And see, there's only, as I said, there's only one light. So there's only one illumination. And we are all. And if we limit ourselves that we're a little bit of light, like the rheostat, you turn it on to be brighter or dimmer. Now, when you do that, what happens? See, we have a rheostat right here on this little lamp up above there. And when you press this here, on she goes, and then you hold it, and then it gets dimmer, 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 out, almost out. Then you press it, it gets brighter. You hold it, have to hold it. Now it gets brighter, 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 brighter. You see? And then you press it once and it's off. Press it once and it's on. You hold it, and it works on the rheostat principle. See? Now that's how you are. This is how most of us are. Kind of dim. A low wattage bulb, maybe 12, 15 watts. That's not very bright. And we want to be brighter. And the way we have to be brighter is by pushing the button. And we push the button by seeing more. We push the button by knowing that we have the ability to see. But you see, then we push the button, and we push the button until we're all of a sudden very bright. Now, this is not able to get bright enough for our purposes here. But when we are at our full illumination, we do not see anything. Now, I want you to get that point, because it's a very easy point. There, it's what? No light. And there, presumably, it's all light. Now, with no light, you can't see anything. With all light, you can't see anything. With the in-between, no light and all light, you can see a little bit, you see? Mm-hmm. Now, those are things that we are working on. We are working on living in the all light. Now, when we live in the all light, what happens? When we live in the all light, then there's no more light to be had. There's no more light to be expressed. There's no more light to be lived or be experienced by us. And when that happens, then nobody sees us and we don't see them. Then we float on the ceiling of the airplane if we want, you know, and we can just take that nap because we want to go along with the group as they're taking the flight. And we like paying the airfare, you know. And wouldn't that be something to get on the airplane and just float at the ceiling there and wait until they open up the overhead areas, and when they close them, then just float up there? Wouldn't that be fascinating? My goodness sakes. You know? And of course, if you're invisible, it wouldn't make any difference either. And if you're invisible, then you're invisible and untouchable. And if you're an invisible and untouchable, then you don't need to float, and you just take an empty seat anyplace,
or you go first class, they're never full anyhow.
Yeah, they're never full anyhow, right? And they just have to keep the waitresses out of the hostesses out of first class seats, but I don't think they sit there.
Uh-uh.
That's not kosher.
No.
And so this is fascinating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This is fascinating. The opportunity we have of being these things. Okay, now, we're saying, Herb, that's a lot of interesting stuff, but I have not seen that practiced. Okay? You won't see it practiced. You'll never see it practiced. Because when you're practicing it, you're doing it. And when you're not practicing it, then you think it's not being done. One famous author of horticultural books wrote about a neighbor girl who came over to visit him at his house. And in his house, he had a big field of beautiful flowers in the backyard. And the little girl went out there and said, "Oh, what beautiful flowers. And do you mind if I walk over them?" And the man said, "Of course not. You know, go be my guest, you know." So she walked over them. She walked on top of the flowers out over into the field, way out and back, and then came back on the porch, which was level with the flowers. And he said, "Well, that was beautiful. How did you do that?" She says, "How did I do what?" She says, "What did I do that was unusual?" You see, for her, it was the most normal thing in the world to walk over the flowers. For her to walk through the things. And you see, when these things become the most normal thing in the world, when it becomes the most normal thing in the world for Bill Gates to be a billionaire, you know, no problem. And my friend, I often tell a story about him, a nice guy. He was a building contractor. And I wrote stories about him for the Newport magazine, and he gave me this sail for his 20-foot Viking sloop, and I kept it in my car and went out sailing in his boat all the time because he didn't use it. And he said, "Use it whenever I want to." So I had that as my personal boat. And so one day he went broke. He went bankrupt. He lost everything. He lived in this glorious house and big Cadillac and several Cadillacs, big this, big that, big the other thing. So he had to start over again. So he started over again with a brand new T-Bird, you know, Thunderbird car, which is a lovely car. And he rented, or leased, a house just down the street from the house where he lived in. And he probably could have rented the place that he had, but the thing is, his name wasn't necessarily good at that moment. But he rented it just down the street. So, you see, his level of failure was some people's level of total success. And so to compare people's level of failure and success and to say when they're being a success and when they're not, is very difficult. Now, you look at Ellen Jeremini, and she has a grandson,
Marcello,
who is a very charming, well fellow, and he has two girlfriends in the same family. And one is the daughter and one is the granddaughter after the man remarried of the richest man in Switzerland. And so these two girls are the two of the richest girls in Switzerland, really. When it comes time for them to do whatever they're going to do, they'll have their inheritance and they'll have loads. As it is, they have abundance to spare. So this kid, who is a normal kid and a good kid, he likes both girls, and both girls know he likes both of them. And he says, I need a car. And they said, here, take my Mercedes, my brand new Mercedes. And so he's driving that thing around for a long time. And then he says, my motorcycle, gave up. Take mine. And they're beautiful motorcycle. Oh, I tell you, with everything on it. And then the other girl, same way. And wasn't the other girl fitting him out with clothing? Oh, yeah, they said he was going to go to dinner with them at some rich place with this rich man's deal, the richest man in Switzerland. And so they had to go and get some new suit of clothes for him to wear to that dinner. And, he just ends up like a bandit, Now, who could ever have guessed that he would have the richest girls in town? He's brilliant. He's intelligent. He is not motivated at the moment, but he'll be motivated. And when he is, he'll be fantastic. Maybe the richest man in the world will say, in Switzerland will say to him, Marcello, how would you like to work for me? I need to have my second man, I want my number two man. You want to be my number two man? Marcello says, you'll be number two and I'll be number one. he's smart enough to go that slower. But it's great. But, this kid, Marcello, he is brilliant. He is genius. He is fabulous. He is great. He's got a personality that he went to driving school, which is necessary in Switzerland. And when he was at driving school, he was tested first by his instructor. And his instructor says, wow, you're good. Will you be my co-instructor? And he says, sure. So in driving school, instead of learning, he's teaching all these, and of course you learn best what you teach, and so he's teaching all these kids how to drive perfectly. And so what must he do? He must be an A number one driver himself wherever he is. He is getting that sort of built into him because the things he's teaching others are things he's putting in his own mind. And he's saying these things to himself and he's teaching these things to himself. Now, he's doing those great things. He comes home, he says, Mom, can I use your little Cooper car, Mini Cooper? And Mother says, no, take the Nissan, the big RV Nissan, and use that, So here he gets in this gigantic, big recreational vehicle, Nissan, and drives all over in the skinny little streets around there and comes home slick as a whistle every time. And then she does let him drive there, her little Mini Cooper, but that's her favorite car, and she loves that. So she's in it most of the time, so nobody has a chance to. But you see, every door opens up for him. He was not able to pass his examination for getting into some special school, which he didn't want to go into, really. So he didn't pass it. And so then, once you haven't passed, your time is over. You've blown it. But for him, he was given another chance. He was given another chance to take another test in another area, and he passed it perfectly. And now he's going on to those training schools and being just fantastic about it. I'm saying to you that when you're good and you are yourself and you're having fun, doing your own thing, doing your own thing, doing your own thing, being yourself and having fun, doing it all the time, under all circumstances, even though other people think you're crazy, then the doors to your infinite possibilities just flash open for you. This kid, he wears his hair in the spiked fashion, that these kids wear it in, and he wears these clothes that are hanging off your butt. And then I learned something new about hanging off your butt clothing. They have underwear sewn into the hang off your butt clothing so that the underwear is always there. It's up over your butt. And, these kids do exquisite things, marvelous things, but they're the creator of their world. Adults do too. And you do too. Now, what have you done? What have you done to create yourself in this wonderful way? Do you look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason? Everything that kid did should have blown up in his face and should have fallen apart. And you know what else about that kid? He said, I haven't got a car. And so his grandmother, who just bought a brand new Mercedes, you know, one of these little Rancho things, real nice little Mercedes, and she says, "But use my car. I don't use it right now. Use my." And this kid, you know, brand new driver, out driving around, and in Mercedes, and big cars, and big things, big responsibilities. Then he comes home and he sits on the computer, just as though, you know, it's his brain, and it is. And he gets on the skateboards, he gets on the skis, he gets on it. And I'm trying to say to you, he is himself and he has fun in everything he does. And this is beautiful, and there's lots more stories that could go in this same type of thing. He just happens to fit this particular one of both wealth, charm, imagination, perspicacity, perseverance, and he's just a fabulous guy. Just a fabulous guy. And he has another thing. Ellen, what's the other thing that he has? When those little children came to the ranch, and what did he do?
He played with them.
How old?
The little boy was 3 years old. So, and then there were four or five little girls.
He's 20 years old, isn't he?
Five, 8 and 7 years old girls. So he played, he's 20. He played with them hide and seek. So he took the little boy, 3 years old, and then they went in a corner, and then they were standing there, and they closed their eyes. But the little boy was peeking out. And so Marcello did the same thing, and they peeked out. And then when it was time to run and find the others, he took the little boy on his arm, and then he ran around and was finding all the little girls and all the children. He had just a wonderful, loving manner with the little
and girl. His girlfriend was there. And or both girlfriends were there, in fact, weren't they? Yeah, his girlfriends were there, and his other friends were there. And yet he went with the little children to show them a good time because they were there, and he felt a little desire to play with them and play on their level, which he did very beautifully. But you see, this is what we all have the capacity to do. This is what we all have the capacity to live and to be if we want to. And I look for thoughts of truth which fail logic and reason, because those thoughts of truth are my unlimited self. Those thoughts of truth are where I can go without limit. And I don't need to walk on fire. I walk on cool, wet moss. I name all things harmonious with my choice. And I live it, I enjoy it, I am it, and I love it. So you guys have a wonderful morning, and know that I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.